This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, here we go. I am burnt out, long ride, a lot of hockey. Ed said, I can see you, a mess, so let's get this thing rolling. I'm tired as hell. I got another 14-hour ride tomorrow, so here we go. Let's start with two quick passings this week. We'll talk a little bit entertainment. We'll talk a little bit sports, but let's start with the passing of Donald Sutherland. My memories of Donald Sutherland was the scene in Animal House where he goes to reach up and get the coffee can out of the top of the shelf and his bare ass shows. That's what I think of when I think Donald Sutherland. Great movie. One of my favorites, Animal House. Plenty of memorable references from that movie. So, Ed, thoughts on the passing of Hawkeye Pierce, the original Hawkeye?
Well, I was going to say, it was a great lead-in. Thank you, sir. I mean, first and foremost, I remember him from watching MASH because the TV show in the movie, a lot more, let's just say, would offend a lot more people if you watched the original MASH in the movie compared to the TV show. I remember him from there. I remember where he got his big break, just doing some research back with the Dirty Dozen. Probably one of my most favorite characters of all time when he was Oddball on Kelly's Heroes. I mean, it just, you know, he was just, he just did a wonderful job and he really kind of just sunk into the characters and that type of thing. Sorry, it was very sad to hear of his passing. So and then the Animal House reference, Andy, I mean, that's pretty funny. I mean, it's an all-time classic, you know. There were blanks in the gun, you know.
Yep.
You know, just off the cuff one that doesn't have anything to do with his scene, you know, when he's bare ass Bill in the kitchen reaching for the coffee, you know. But he really was a great actor, and to have it go for such a long time. I did watch the 60 Minutes interview of him, and his mother told him that he was ugly when he was growing up, and that was pretty. I mean, she didn't say it just like that, but she pretty much, he asked my mom, "Mom, am I ugly?" And she's like, and I forget exactly what she said, but he went in his room for about a day because he was really, and then he turned into a sex symbol and he dated Jane Fonda. So, you know, pretty interesting dude.
Yeah. Brad, thoughts on the passing of Donald Sutherland?
Man, I'm a amateur movie buff. I don't get deep into it. I don't care about directors and who made what movie, but I am a little bit of a movie buff. And Donald Sutherland, this one kind of sucks, man. Like, if you go look at his IMDb, it is extensive. This man made movies and great movies at that. The Dirty Dozen, one of my favorite, all-time favorite war movies. If you have not seen that, you mentioned Animal House, and he played a character in Animal House that's kind of out of his wheelhouse of what you know Donald Sutherland for. He was actually in the 90s film of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, way before the TV show took skyrocketed to cult classic stardom. And most notably, I think if we have any younger people watching, he was Snow in the Hunger Games movies. In the Hunger Games franchise, and now I think those might be his last, like, you know, really big films that he did. But Donald Sutherland, man, like, they don't make them like that anymore. I don't know what else to say. Guy was a true What's the word for people that act thespians?
That's
That's what he was, man. This one kind of sucks, man, but we talk about it every week. Like we're getting into that age range, man.
The thing, my entry level into Donald Sutherland movies, the first movie I saw him in, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. The reason.
Dang, see?
Yeah. Yep.
He made some films, man.
Yep.
Like classics in every category, man.
Yeah. And let's say we mentioned one more passing icon. An icon in the world of baseball, the Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays. Arguably, from my father's generation, you had these about five guys that were like, who was your favorite baseball player? It was Willie Mays, it was Ted Williams, it was Mickey Mantle, it was all those guys, Ernie Banks. There's like five of them that they would always argue back then who was better and whatever. And Willie Mays, famous catch in the World Series, the Say Hey Kid. Ed, thoughts on Willie Mays?
You never realized how really awesome he was as a baseball player. What 3,000 hits. Let's see, 300 home runs. Let's see, over, and then what, 300 stolen bases. His first pitch that he hit, I believe, was off of Warren Spahn, and he hit, and it was a home run. I mean, and just to kind of, I watched the Sports Century program on him from ESPN, just to kind of look at it from a different perspective, from a different point of view. He took 2 years off, like a lot of the superstars, like Ted Williams did, for the Korean War. He didn't wind up over there. He really, there were some certain things that got brought up. He kind of became a recluse, when they moved to San Francisco, and he just kind of, pretty much just went to the ballpark and ordered room service. And I forget who the manager was, but he never really held Willie accountable and allowed him to experience life and kind of grow and that type of thing. So it was really sad. I mean, just to a lot of those guys back in those days, the late 40s, early 50s is before our time. But just those numbers at that, because I mean, they were swinging, basically oak trees. And against 90 mile an hour fastballs, and to understand how hard that is, pick up one of an old school bat and you'll see how heavy one of those things is, and to come around like
Yeah.
that at
Yeah,
that
don't
pitch.
forget
But
those uniforms were that heavy material too back
I
then.
am too.
That held the sweat and held the water. It was like running around with like a peacoat on or something like that. It was different. It was definitely a different time. Brad, thoughts on the Say Hey Kid?
Yeah, man, HBO has a really cool documentary about Willie Mays on there, if you guys get a chance to watch that. But just looking back at old clips and old photos of Willie Mays, like he was genetically way ahead of his time when you talk about his physical attributes, man. Like the pictures of him, his biceps are ripped. He's just like completely jacked. And I'm like, at what point during that era did they have like this science or this know-how to go and get that ripped? Like it had to have been like a genetic advantage. He just had good genes.
He
But
did,
the
Brad.
way,
To
go
tap into
ahead.
that for a second, they talked about that on the Sports Century about him, that the doctor said when he came out, they talked about how big his hands were. And I mean, and I agree with you. I mean, there was a shot of him when he was 17, and he looked like he could rip a fire hydrant out of the ground. So continue. Sorry,
Watch him like how he holds the bat, how he just wraps his hands around the bat. The bat just looks like, I mean, it looks like a twig or a toothpick in his hands, and just a pure swing, extremely fast. I mean, by any measure of athletic standards, even today, he would be considered, a premier elite athlete, as fast as he could run. And to be able to hit the ball like that and run and steal the bases like that. Man, this one sucks too, guys. Like it's
Sure.
we're in that era, man.
Sure.
So protect the great ones at all costs, man.
Yeah, man. Where triples go to die. That was one of the things that they said about him, is that where triples go.
Oh. The car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Good die.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, and it's incredible to hear something like that, you know.
Master of the basket catch, right?
Yeah.
If you ever look at the first sports collectible figures that they made were called Hotland figures. They were in my father's generation. They were collectible. They were like statues. They're probably, you know, maybe about 10 inches high. Go back and look at the Hotland Willie Mays figure. It's him making the basket catch. And I had it at one time, and it's really cool. If you're super into baseball and you like vintage stuff, like those Hotland figures, they don't lose their value, and definitely worth checking out because some of the guys that they made, there's some deep dives in there. So let's move on. Let's get to this week's email. A good one. I think it's the first one we've had that's been directed at the tinfoil hat. Ed, take it away.
Well, this email is brought to you by GoonGuard. GoonGuard.com. Check them out. Use the discount code 1973. Great mouth guards. And I wonder if you saw any of these down in the Kakalakis at the tournaments. The same. All right. This one comes straight from Ben from Carlton, Oregon. All right. Hey, 1973, if you can ask Brad, what is the military conspiracy that he has seen? Aliens in person, etc. Well, I just want to go this to our legal counsel. Let's be careful here with Brad because, you know, we don't want Brad to lose his pension.
or his military clearance.
Yeah, or we don't want Brad to be permanently canceled.
Yeah. Didn't Jackie Gleason pick up Brad one time in late at night and take him to see Aliens?
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't have the type of job that got me into areas like that.
Allegedly.
Yeah, but what was the root of the question again, Ed?
Well, if the root of the question was, what military secrets did you see? That's pretty much what he's.
Did you see anything like outlandish? I worked with a guy one time that he was over in Iraq. He had done a couple tours of duty, and he was out doing maneuvers. So I don't know what the proper terminology is, and he swears that he saw something that moved like a stealth bomber, but when it flew over them, he could see Egyptian writing on the bottom, what looked like Egyptian writing. So he stuck to the story. This was long before a lot of stuff came out, and I was just enamored by the story, and I was asking him questions. He's like, that's all I remember seeing. And I would ask him again, Brad, I don't mean to cut you off, but go ahead.
No, I mean, that's a great, great, you know, observation. I don't think I ever saw anything wacky like that. Obviously, we had our stories about haunted hangars and haunted buildings and stuff like that. But there was that one video circulating on around the web not too long ago of that alien type of jellyfish thing that was like floating through cities of like Iraq or something like that, that it was sent in from like soldiers who caught it on infrared, and there's just no explanation for what it is. I didn't see anything like that. I mean, if we want to be more boring with it, I think one of the biggest eye openers for me is just like the gross negligence and waste of money. that you pay your taxes and you expect to see improvements and stuff or investments downrange. And like, why are these Afghanis building the sidewalk for the 10th time this year? Like, who's paying for this shit? So we're sending, you know, millions and millions of dollars over here. And I'm like, can we not build this goddamn sidewalk? Like, and they're like, oh no, we have to, we forgot to lay this piping. And I'm like, well, why would you pour the cement before you laid the the piping. It's like I'm not connecting the dots. So then they would rip up the whole fucking sidewalk and lay this piping and repour the cement. And then a couple of weeks later, they were like, "Oh, we forgot to put this fiber optic cable down." So I was like, "Let me guess, we're ripping up this fucking sidewalk again." Got it. And that was just on a small level, man. That kind of bullshit was going on over there. And you know, the Pentagon has lost trillions of dollars in their audit year over year. And the thing is, it gets washed and laundered and passed from person to person. And by the time it gets over there, nobody knows where that shit's going. That's why it took them 10 tries to build this. I was in Afghanistan for 6 months. It took them 10 times to build that damn sidewalk, man. You know, like there was just all kinds of shit like that going on, man. And whether it was a building or a sidewalk or a road, or vehicles, like holy shit, the Department of Defense burned a shit ton of money in vehicles, and then we left them there, you know. So I don't know why taxpayers aren't more up in arms over the waste of money in both those conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, man. And I would say if there is like one big conspiracy to just kind of put a pin in for that whole situation, we never found weapons of mass destruction. And being in Iraq several times, it wasn't even on our list of things to do, man. Like it wasn't, you know, nobody was looking for weapons of mass destruction. We were trying not to, you know, take a round or a rocket or a mortar. We were just, you know, but it's never briefed, it's never talked about. Nobody ever talks about it anymore. It's just buried. There were no
Also,
WMDs. There was, I don't know why we went into that country.
looking for a Stargate, maybe.
I've heard that. I think there's more credibility, more evidence to us going in Iraq for the Stargate and old ancient artifacts from you know, the Anunnaki and some of these old ancient cultures. I think there's more evidence for that than there is for weapons of mass destruction.
So let's segue this email into this week's tinfoil hat. So tinfoil hat is always brought to you by our web store. I'm not going to read it. That's the professor's job. But this week, if you use promo code 1973 podcast, you'll get 10% off any t-shirt in the store. So Bradford, the floor is yours.
Whew, I have a good one here. 10-year anniversary. We're off by a couple of months, but there's been a lot of chatter on the web about Malaysian Flight 370. So, real quick recap for those who don't know, Malaysian Flight 370 took off from Kuala Lumpur in March of 2014. It was headed to Beijing. Lost contact roughly an hour after takeoff. And there's a lot of really wild, interesting tidbits about the disappearance of this plane. The transponder and black box were both shut off, and which makes it essentially invisible on commercial radar. At some point, it disappeared off radar and it turned west southwest and flew back through Malaysia and out towards like in the Indian Ocean. There was a flight 30 minutes ahead who was able to contact them, but all they got was static and mumbling. And so nothing really coherent that they could build anything off of. And then it disappeared. Military radar caught it briefly, going again like west, southwest into the Indian Ocean. And then it was just gone. This one's weird because we lost a Boeing 777. That is a huge aircraft. There was over 230 people on it. Nobody was ever found, no luggage, no remnants. They have found plane parts, and I'll get into that because it's really sketchy the stuff that they found. But the plane essentially, for all intents and purposes, just vanished. And it's odd because in the history of aircraft, usually they find evidence, the black box, there's some GPS coordinates, they'll find bodies, they'll find survivors. There's something to say, hey, here's where that plane went, and we got it. So this is where it gets weird. After it disappeared, several days after, this other website called Tomnots is basically like a collective of civilian, just like geocaching type of people who have access to like satellite images and Google Earth and stuff like that. They kind of put it out there like, hey, Tomnotters, let's find this aircraft. One woman actually found pictures in the South China Sea of what looked like to be a downed aircraft. She found tons and tons of pictures. She screenshotted it. She shared it. She reported it to TomKnot. Nothing ever happened. They ghosted her. They never sent it up. It got ghosted. Never made the news. You don't know about it until you watch the Netflix documentary. It's three episodes. Check it out. It goes really in depth. That's where I got most of my stuff here. So anyway, they found a bunch of wreckage on TomKnot, but nobody ever reported it. Additionally, there's an oil rig out there in the South China Sea, and an oil rig worker said he actually saw like a flaming, fireball coming through the air. And the news, nobody ever picked that up. Nobody ever ran with it. Nobody ever investigated it. And on top of that, a satellite company called Inmarsat, they had equipment on the plane. And that's kind of like sketchy. Like, what equipment was on this plane that they were tracking? They were tracking this plane and the equipment. They're the ones that went through their data and they found that the plane had traveled south, like way south into the Indian Ocean, like towards Australia. Like way out to like a really remote part of the ocean. Turns out Inmarsat has a lot of government contracts with US, Russia, and China, the military government contractors. So why do they have equipment? What are they doing? Why was their stuff on a commercial airliner? Big question here, big red flag. So that was the Inmarsat thing. Then several years after all this stuff goes down, this philanthropist, like Indiana Jones millionaire type looking ass dude named Brian Gibson comes forward. Brian Gibson's like, hey, I've been out here around Madagascar and like out here in like the middle of nowhere on some remote island. Like, I found some plane wreckage. I think it's from Malaysia Flight 370. Turns out this dude, Brian Gibson, winds up being like this guru of finding Malaysia 370 flight parts. Like, he's just finding wreckage. He shows up on the beach, and within 30 minutes, he has a piece of debris, and he's like, oh, it's off the airplane. And everybody's like, why do you have such an in? Why are you the only person? We're talking Australia, China, Malaysia, Vietnam, the US, all these countries have been looking for wreckage. And one man, you just happen to pop up on a beach and you found a bunch of wreckage. Ooh, really weird. Turns out he has a lot of ties to Russia. A lot of business connects that are kind of seedy and kind of shady. He's also the only guy who's ever found wreckage by himself. Multiple countries looking, Brian Gibson is the only one who's found the wreckage. Malaysia did find one wing fragment off of Reunion Island. And this is really odd. It's just a cutout of a wing. And so on airplanes, there's ID plates that are stamped and like riveted into the side of the plane. The ID plate was missing, convenient enough. And they were like, well, based off the fact that we lost a plane and we found a wing fragment, we're just going to say that's 370 and it crashed here. Now, case closed, right? Wrong. Turns out they only remove those ID plates when the plane gets decommissioned and is sent to the graveyard. So the fact that, like, a plane crash and getting tossed around in the ocean, those things are riveted, glued, and secured and welded on. Like, the ID plate's not going to get removed from ocean currents and wreckage. Somebody removed it. So people are starting to say Brian Gibson is planting evidence on Madagascar. They're saying that wing fragment was planted by somebody to cover up what happened to Flight 370. Now for the super weird electronic slash technological cargo of some sort was loaded onto that plane. It wasn't scanned in or processed correctly on the manifest. It was kind of like ghost cargo, if you will. So people are trying to figure out what was on this plane. Why was it loaded correctly? Why wasn't it manifested? Like, what are they trying to hide? What are they trying to cover up? They basically proved it was impossible for the pilots to shut off the transponder in the black box. That was a big thing. The pilots were accused of kind of hijacking it themselves. Well, you can't turn off the transponder unless you leave the cockpit of the plane. There's a panel on the floor. You have to lift it, go underneath into the inner workings of the plane, and then have the know-how to go find it to switch it off. It's a little bit of a job. Your average pilot isn't really versed in that. Then the US FBI got involved and they Well, the Malaysian government conveniently raided the pilot's home a few weeks after the crash or the disappearance. And our FBI, for some reason, got a hold of the hard drives and conveniently released, like years later, that they found out the pilot had a flight simulator. And on his hard drive, they found the exact path of disappearance. The exact path? This dude had a flight sim to go west off his course, turn south, and fly 6 hours till he ran out of fuel. I'm not a pilot, but I don't think I need a flight simulator to practice that. You know, he didn't like go make a bunch of stops. He literally flew west, turned south, and flew till he ran out of fuel. Anyway, really odd the FBI released that. And then there's the conspiracy that the U.S. was conducting military exercises in the South China Sea. And they, whatever that electronic secret cargo was, our AWACS came in, jammed the signal, which is why it disappeared off of radar. And that the AWACS commanded this plane to go land somewhere. Now, Diego Garcia is out in the middle of the ocean out there within proximity to the disappearance of this plane. So if they had something secret on there that our government wanted, they could have very easily diverted it to Diego Garcia. Kind of wacky, kind of outlandish, but it's a possibility. Then there's the idea that the Russians got involved. And I only say that because 2 months after Malaysia 370 disappeared, another Malaysian plane was flying over Ukraine and Crimea, and the Russians shot that mug down. So they already kind of have this history of shooting down Malaysian airlines, right? And then another conspiracy is that the prime minister was at that time was spending a lot of money trying to impress his wife, buying like $500,000 handbags and jewelry and all this whatnot, and that he may have contributed to the disappearance, or at least withheld information of the disappearance to prolong the search efforts, because he was basically laundering money through these search efforts to go and, like, you know, get all this shit for his wife. And then, of course, there's aliens, you know, could have been aliens. I want to screen share real quick just so I can host disabled. Oh, buddy. Never mind then. We won't share it. But I was going to show like a map of the crash, the flight path and everything like that, but it's not a big deal. But
Brad, I'll work on that. Go ahead.
Oh, but yeah. So like there's a lot of, there's too many steps and conspiracies. And I think one of the biggest issues that they had with ever finding this aircraft was there were so many different multinational countries involved and nobody was talking to each other. And there are all these different, language barriers and cultural barriers that kind of worked against ever finding anything for this aircraft or their families. All right. So let me share this. Can y'all see it?
Yep.
So here we go. So it took off here, Kuala Lumpur, lost radar contact here. It actually flew this way, and this is where military radar had it and then lost it. And then Inmarsat said they tracked it all the way down to here. Now, here's another thing, right? This is post 9/11. If you have a rogue aircraft who's supposed to fly north into Beijing, disappears off radar, turns west, and then south, why weren't military aircraft scrambled to go after this? Like 9/11 changed the way planes flew forever worldwide. If there is a rogue aircraft, why didn't anybody go? Why weren't military scrambled to go look for this aircraft and intercept it? Super weird. Reunion Island, this is where they found that wing fragment. Madagascar is where more debris was found by Brian Gibson. And Diego Garcia is out here somewhere in this area. So you can see if it were to fly from Malaysia to Diego Garcia, that's pretty possible. But now they're saying where this little search area swath is right off the coast of Perth, there is a tsunami indicator, like microphone in the water that picks up vibrations and explosions, basically any like disturbance in the ocean. And it picked up on the date that this plane disappeared, a pretty sizable ping, and so that has reconcentrated efforts. So they're actually out looking for this plane again, in this area right here, which I think is pretty neat. 10 years later, maybe they'll find something and put this all to rest. And that concludes my report on the Boeing Malaysia flight. Oh, my own personal conspiracy. It's a Boeing aircraft. Maybe this mug went down because Boeing sucks. And this has just been a 10-year cover-up from Boeing.
Ed, rebuttal?
Oh, there's no rebuttal. I just, I believe that there were four, I think that there were four scientists on board that plane as well that had certain patents that had military application. And if and it was just about ready to be approved, and however, if something happens to the people that had the names on the patent goes directly back to the defense contracting company that they work for. Oh, well,
see,
isn't that suspicious?
There's so much with this airplane. There's so much. And the more you go into it, it's overwhelming.
You know, and I mean, my thing is that, you know, military radar is, you know, if you're dealing with, it's fairly sensitive, I would assume. And I would also say that it's very suspicious that the Malaysian government didn't scramble their jets. You have an aircraft that's hurtling at you at 550 miles an hour, and you don't put a bird in the sky. That sounds suspicious to me. But you know, not military and never been, and never will be. But that sounds suspicious to me.
I mean, as soon as it disappeared from radar, why weren't jets scrambling? Why weren't they launching search attempts? It was almost like they saw it disappear. Nobody acted on it. They waited till it was way off course. They still didn't act on it. And after it allegedly turned south, now they're like, oh, hey, we don't know.
Ed, you good with tinfoil hat this week?
Because I thought it was pretty good. I actually watched the CNN version of it, Brad, and I watched a couple other things. And so it was pretty interesting to see how, you know, a plane that big, that's pretty much like the size of a skyscraper.
Yeah.
Pretty much disappears. I find that very interesting.
Without Brad, a trace.
Do you want to mention the Netflix documentary on that?
I don't even remember what it's called. Okay. I think it's called MH370. It's three episodes. It's really good. And if you want to take another route of predictive programming, there's a show on Netflix where a whole plane of people disappears, came out after this shit happened, and then they all show up randomly because it was like some alien time travel portal bullshit. But again, hey, if that's what happened to them, predictive programming, we've seen it.
Thank you, The Simpsons. There you go. Tinfoil hat for this week. Great one. Another great one. Can talk about that stuff forever. For our two basketball fans out there, we'll have to mention Ed, title number 18 for the Boston Celtics, NBA World Champions for 2024. Care to add anything to that?
Celtics won. That's awesome. That's great. Very happy for them. They basically are what they lose. Two games through the whole thing. There was a big hubbubaloo on sports radio saying, are they the greatest team ever or whatnot? I don't think that they could have hung with the Lakers or the Celtics or the Bulls or the Pistons. Just those four teams right there would have mopped the floor with them. But, you know, it's today's basketball. So being serious, really happy that the Celtics won. Another one in the rafters. And, you know, it's kind of different because – you know, the vents don't have 6 inches of dust on the ones at the new Boston Garden like the old ones did.
Correct. Brad, anything to add to that NBA championship?
I don't think this team is like a dominant force. I think they waltzed into the finals. Everybody they played had injuries, had issues. Then they got the Mavs that were banged up and just tired and exhausted because they just went to straight war to get through the West. I have seen a lot of chatter that this was probably the worst finals in a long time, but they say that almost every year anyway. As a mediocre and moderate enthusiast of the NBA, I would say this finals was right up there. Not the worst for me, but pretty close. The worst for me was the bubble finals. I thought that shit was dumb. Why they even had a season. I thought it was stupid. But this was right up there for that finals. And now, if Boston repeats, I'll give them their due, right? If they can run it back next year, or maybe miss next year and run it back the year after, if this team turns into a dynasty, I'll give them their due. If not, the East is easy. It's historically, it's been the easiest conference, the easiest side of the NBA. My thing is, why haven't they been winning championships? Like, LeBron went west, has struggled. Why hasn't Boston been an absolute dominant force for the last 6 or 8 years? Let's talk about that.
We'll have to save that for somebody that knows.
Yeah. No. That's a very good question, Brad. Moving on to the next one. And to go old sales guy, Brad, I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Yeah. So speaking of from bad finals to good finals, tomorrow night, or Monday night, is game 7. We're going for a possible reverse sweep, something that you've never been done in any time that I've been watching the NHL. What a story! There's been two ladies that have gone viral, one for a certain saying, and one for a flash. And the girl, since that happened, she has been nothing but blowing up the internet. She just did a shoot for Playboy.
Yep.
She brought Edmonton the most luck that they have had since she did that. So it's sometimes all it takes is a little fan support, ladies. So get on that. Don't be afraid. Root for your favorite team. You never know. You might go viral. Ed, thoughts on the game 7?
Well, it's been very exciting. And Edmonton is, for the last past 3 games, they look like they are the better team. They look like they have Florida running around. They are playing such a puck possession game and keeping the puck away from the Panthers. And the Panthers are still out hitting them, but they're trying to get the puck. But, that move that McDavid did when he skated through, all 5 of the Panthers, I mean, if anybody questions if he's the greatest hockey player of today, you're not watching what everybody else is watching because he's fantastic. Like last night, I thought it was a little ticky-tack that Edmonton called that, the review on the offsides on that goal. I thought that was pretty ticky-tack. I really didn't like that. I really feel like that, if you looked at it like 9 out of 10 ways, he wasn't offsides. And then there was the 10% that he was offsides, and they called it. And I really think that because that was only 10 seconds after Edmonton scored, it really seemed like that it kind of let a lot of the air out of the Panthers. And the Panthers are looking tired. Edmonton looks like they've gotten their legs back again for some reason, because the Panthers are just chasing the puck. And quite a few times last night, they're skating 5-on-5 and they're in a diamond. They're not attacking the puck. So I don't know what's going on. And, game 7 Monday. I mean, it's anybody's game. And I mean, I think Andy and myself, we both called game 7. And I think I picked the Panthers. Andy, I don't remember which one you got, but it's going to be a great game no matter what. And I hope it's a war. And it should be.
If every kid that plays, I know this is a cliche to say, but when you're outside shooting around, it's game 7, Stanley Cup Finals. He's got the puck on his stick, the whole deal. So, if any part of that plays into this, the kid in you that wants to watch one hockey game, this is the one you want to watch. It's the end of the season. Somebody's going home crying, and it should be – everything should come out in this game. It should be fast-paced, hard-hitting, a lot of scrums. That whole thing about leaving it all out there, this is the game you're going to get. And, man, if like I said, if you're not a hockey fan and you're going to watch one game, this is the one to watch because it's going to be high drama. And you never know, you might see a set of boobs. Who knows?
I'll tune in for that.
She may be there because she was at the game last night.
She was. She was with the Barstool Sports guys, and they were acting up. So if ever there was something to watch on Monday night, I know that that's wrestling night for some people, but I have to put that one on the old DVR and watch something live and watch the other one on tape delay, kind of like Nitro and Raw. So speaking of wrestling, let's get into it. I told Brad, I booked it. CM Punk, the screw job. The fans were hot. They didn't get what they wanted. CM Punk got some heat. You don't know what kind of, who's the heel, who's the baby face. Maybe it's one of those Bret and Shawn kind of things. Internationally, CM Punk's a heel. In the U.S., he's a face. I like that. They could run with that. That never gets old. It's an international company officially now. So, they'll travel back to Europe and maybe he'll be a heel over there. You know, it's almost like MJF in Long Island. He's only a baby face in Long Island. So, the possibility for the WWE is going in the direction that I had talked about a couple of months ago. Cody got the blade out during Clash at the Castle. AJ Styles got the blade out when it matters. It's not overdone like on AEW. It's a main event. It's a grudge match. It's used when it needs to be. So, a lot to talk about. And NXT has now passed AEW in the ratings. More people are watching NXT because you never know who's going to show up. They kind of leave it like a little bit. You never know what could happen. I like that. The thing I did like about Cody Rhodes showing up on NXT, I've been waiting for somebody to do this for the longest time. If you go back to watch those old TBS shows when somebody was on and they had a title, it was always folded and they held it under their arm like this. Blair used to do it. Tully used to do it. They all used to not over the shoulder. They didn't wear it in interviews. They would always hold it like this. And Cody was walking around backstage, old school, holding the belt like that with the suit on. It just, for me, it just looked right. So, Brad, thoughts on Clash at the Castle? Thoughts on, they finally got my boy Jacob Fatu. That guy's an absolute beast.
He's a fucking menace.
Out of all the Samoans, that's the guy that I wanted them to bring in for the longest time. He's had histories of criminal background. That's why nobody really wanted to deal with him, but that's what you want. You want the danger. Bradford, floor is yours.
Man, I've been chomping at the bit, waiting for this segment all week. Because look, Clash of the Castle, arguably and easily the worst PLE they've put on in a long time. Not because of the screw job. Was I pissed at the screw job? Yeah, you're supposed to be mad. But that I love the way they did it, and I was looking forward to what happened this week. 100%, yes, absolutely. The thing that made the PLE also so bad, the Cody AJ Styles match was whack. It was a 5-star match up until the end. The end was dumb. AJ Styles would never just scream, "I quit." But I did love the fact that Cody hit him with the steel steps. Anyway, the match was over. He looked at his mom. "Should I?" She said, "Yeah." He hit him. I think that's leading up to the Cody heel turn. That's what I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna stamp it. Make it official. I think it's leading up to. We're probably not going to see it for a while, but eventually. And then at the end of the match, you saw the Bloodline came out. They start fighting and shit. Randy Orton came out, and Randy Orton was just like eyeballing the title. Like, I think there's a little bit of foreshadowing there. And I would love to see Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton just have a match, dude. Like, friend versus friend. Total respect. I think that would be a five-star match. Obviously, Cody would win it. They're not going to give Randy Orton the title or nothing like that. It doesn't fit into the story, but that would be incredible. The other parts with the PLE that sucked is there were so many botches, and it was from big-name stars. Damian Priest had the botch in the ropes, and he could have possibly really jacked his knee up, if we're being honest. He might have really actually hurt himself. But Jade Cargill, watching her wrestle and watching her in the ring, it's like watching white people dance. It is awkward and it is offbeat, and you just want to tell them to sit the hell down. Like, stop doing this, man. You're not made for it. Go sit down. She's getting a push because Mark Henry found her. He's got some connects with Triple H. She is an athlete. I don't think wrestling is her thing. She can go be a fitness model. She can go do bodybuilding competitions. I don't think in-ring is her thing. And I'm saying that I'm a huge Jade Cargill fan. She was one of the, I was like, this chick is awesome. I'm going to watch AEW for her. She disappeared, came back to WWE, but they buried her because they put her in the, put where they were putting her through some training because they were like, hey, you kind of suck. And now they paired her up with Bianca Belair because she sucks. And I think that's actually holding Bianca Belair back. That's whatever, though. Monday Night Raw, Seth Rollins made his return. It was incredible. Huge pop when we heard his entrance music. Nobody expected. I had no idea he was supposed to come back. I thought he was gone at least till SummerSlam. So when he came out, we were up off the couch. We were cheering. Absolutely incredible. I want to save the Wyatt Six for the end if we can. That's a huge thing I definitely want to talk about. SmackDown sold out. They were at WWE. Oh, so first off, I'm a fan of AEW. Huge fan. WWE has been absolutely cooking this past week. They sold out. They have been selling out every show before WrestleMania, the road to WrestleMania, and after. They've been selling out their shows. SmackDown was a sellout show. CM Punk came back. Jacob Fatu came back. It was absolutely incredible. I was so excited just for this injection of like energy into the program that we've been missing for so long. They're building up this awesome feud between the Bloodline and Cody and CM Punk and all this other stuff. The way Paul Heyman's character came out and hugged CM Punk and asked him to take him with him, and the crowd went absolutely bananas. And then Heyman said, CM Punk has always been protected. Roman Reigns always understood that. And then the crowd was saying, we want Roman Reigns, you know, to come back. Absolutely incredible, man. And then NXT, real quick, had the most viewed moment on WWE social media since WrestleMania. It eclipsed WrestleMania views. And that was when my boy, Joe Hendry, made his debut at NXT. And if you guys don't know who Joe Hendry is, I shared his entrance song in the group chat. Go watch it. I apologize if you sing that song in your sleep. It is so damn catchy. It was number one on iTunes in Europe, for crying out loud. The dude is a star. Him, and I love that Triple H is doing this, having stars from TNA pop up here and there. They don't get a lot of action, a lot of push, because they're from another program. I understand it, but having them on there is incredible. I loved it. Joe Hendry is just hilarious. He's a great athlete. The Wyatt Six, Andy, what do you think about that? We finally got him. The reveal was awesome. I enjoyed it. It was very theatrical. It was very Bray Wyatt, WWE. My question is, how are they going to book this shit? Is that going to be a weekly thing? The death and the blood and the hammers, and how are they going to book these matches?
So if you're going this, a couple ways you can hit this. Yeah, you're hitting it from what I like to call sports-based presentation, because with all that stuff going on backstage and people getting laid out, and where are the cops? How come the cops didn't show up and break that up? You know, if you're trying to put a actual real life perspective on it, if that happened in the UFC and somebody was getting shit kicked out of them by six guys, five guys backstage, they would be some kind of melee. There just wouldn't be a rogue cameraman going around the back like it's the shower scene in Psycho. The presentation is great. I like the original Wyatt family that they brought up, the swamp, Charles Manson kind of culty thing. That was awesome. The supernatural thing, I'm kind of all set with. I am kind of all set with that. With that Mountain Dew match that they had at WrestleMania a couple of years ago with Bray Wyatt, where everybody had the neon paint and he got pushed off the thing, and Uncle Howdy was all set with that stuff. That stuff is, I got no time for that stuff. Give me, you want to give me evil characters like The Undertaker? Okay, right on the cusp of being hokey. Make it believable. You know, is he dead? Is he alive? You know, Goofy Paul Bearer, I get it. But, you know, you can't keep doing the same thing. Just, you know, once a coloring book is colored, you can't go back and color it again. It's the same, it's kind of the same thing. So if you're going to do it right, make those guys kind of an attraction. You're not really going to put belts on them because how are you going to take it off them? You know, that kind of thing. It's a feud or mid card. I don't see it being main event, lower mid card kind of status. None of them's going to win the IC belt. Don't put the tag belts on them. Just have them come in and give you a quick 3 minute match where they're setting up some kind of angle or feud with guys that you don't really have nothing to do with, maybe to get guys over. Are they gonna go after Cody and Roman Reigns? I don't see that. But I mean, the presentation was good. I just hate when WWE is too 93, 94-ish with Duke the Dumpster Drosy and Rad Radford, and this guy's a fireman, and this guy's a, you know, he works at the DMV, and this guy does your taxes, and this guy's or and this guy takes your garbage. So the, you know, it, I'm all set with that stuff. Thoughts on the Wyatts?
I mean, like I said, I liked the presentation, and they actually like show Chad Gable like busted up and like bloody, and then they took him out of his Money in the Bank qualifying match. So I was like, oh, so this is how they're gonna run with this. If they catch it backstage, that affects you in real time, real life matches. But then Adam Pearce came out. I was like, no, Gable's fine. He's cleared. He'll be in the match. I'm like, what? No. That's like you're messing up. Like, if that's how you're gonna book this, do it. Like, make it believable, make it a thing. Otherwise, what's the point of getting them backstage if it's not even gonna affect their match? Like,
Correct.
it's pointless. Now it's like, oh, somebody has a target on their back, but we know that target is meaningless. So
Well,
I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
yeah, speaking of you know, I mentioned The Undertaker. I'm sorry, he's been all over doing different things, different podcasts and whatever. And they were asking him about the Cody Rhodes run, and he wasn't bashing him or whatever. He said that he's a fan, but he thinks he would make a fantastic heel.
Yes.
So when he did the New Japan stuff and he was solo for a little while there, he was in Ring of Honor as a heel, he was in Japan as a heel. So he has it in him. It's just, you know, they wanted him to turn heel in AEW, he wouldn't do it. And there was that whole, you know, I won't turn type of thing. And so I think his run's gonna be decent, memorable, but when he gets beat, it'll be storyline based. It'll be something there. He won't just lose it because they want to take the belt off him. I'm sure they have something planned for him. And credit to Triple H, you know, ding dong, Vince McMahon's no longer in the picture. When you get the blood, because the time that Batista did it, because now it come from Batista, the story that he told was he thought that the psychology of the match, it called for it, and he got the blade out and he did it, and they charged him $250,000 for bleeding when it was, you know, outlawed. So they've been using the term pro wrestling during WWE shows. They're expanding into other avenues with you never know who might show up, which I like because they have that still little NWA group that's out there with like Titus, what was his name? He had the Funkadelics and back in the day. What was his name? He used to come out with Naomi and the other one dancing. What the hell? Anyways, he was the NWA champion for a little while. EC3 is there, I think, the champion now. So there's a cusp of guys that they could, bring in and surprise. Nothing that and somebody's not going to show up and win the whole thing. But it's nice to have a little bit of variety to pull from rather than being in that WWE bubble where nothing else in wrestling exists outside of that. But that's one thing that's great to have in the queue to pull from. Just especially when you're trying to hotshot a show like NXT and give that, because nobody really cares about the Forbidden Door. Nobody wants to see New Japan wrestlers that they have no inkling who they are, and they can't get over on American TV because they don't have the personality to cut a promo, and all the managers a lame that they put them with. And the only good manager out there that would do well is Don Callis. He's really good as a heel manager. I mean, he was great when he was the Jackal in ECW and WWF back in the day. Speaking of, let's segue and talk about what we've been talking about the last while, the who killed WCW. And speaking of WWF in the late 90s, Vince Russo shows up and you listen to him talk. And the quote that I got out of that was, I had to put myself in the picture because I realized I was better than 80% of the roster. Ed, you haven't been in the wrestling talk much. So I want your take on this episode three of Who Killed WCW?
Well, it basically sounds like it's a bunch of 5-year-old kindergarten girls saying who did what and everything like that and passing the buck. Nobody's owning anything. And Vince Russo, like I remember seeing that host that I remember seeing that with him get in there, get through the cage by Goldberg, and I was like, this is stupid. And then I was like, this is dumb. And the whole David Arquette shenanigans, like I was like, that was dumb. Like, why is this going down? Like, and like I remember that night with Hogan, and I was like, that's stupid. Like, why is it going down? And to hear him talk, he's another self-promoter. I never did anything wrong. It was Bischoff's fault. And then you have Bischoff on for the rebuttal. And Bischoff's like, well, they kicked me out. Then they brought me back. And I was told that I'm supposed to oversee, Vince and all this other stuff. And then Vince comes out in the ring that night with Hogan and says, you'll never see him with the belt on again. It really just. Basically, what's going on is just to kind of segue it and tie it back, and then I'll kick it to you guys is it's exactly what the AEW is doing now, and they're doing the same exact playbook on how to destroy a wrestling company by doing exactly what WCW did. And I'm not impressed with Bischoff. I'm not impressed with Vince. They both suck. And then here, and then the whole thing from Kevin Nash. I mean, it's almost like one of those things where it's like if Kevin just would just be quiet, he'd still have like that status of being pretty badass. And he's kind of getting let out into a different light now. It's kind of like you're kind of like a bigger and taller version of Hogan. And I don't like that because I always liked Big Sexy. I thought he was awesome. When they first came in and took over, I mean, man, it was like you could not like watch more Monday Night like with those guys. It's just that whole. The whole faction and Conan seems like he's about the only person that wants to tell the truth. Everybody else is self-serving.
So I think if before we get to Brad, my thought is when you have something as good going as Monday Nitro and AEW had Dynamite, why do you want to add another show or more than one show? Make that one show epic. And then if you're not on the show, it means you're not good enough to be on the show. That's just how it goes. and then trim your roster from there. That way you have room if somebody's available. You bring in somebody else that fits right in as, you know, good for that 2 hours.
If your skit's not good enough to get on TV, you're not getting on TV, to your point, right?
Why did they have to have the Thunder? Just to have Bret Hart? They created Collision to keep CM Punk away from the guys in the Elite.
Mm.
That became their Thunder. That's a recipe for disaster. You don't create another show to appease another star. You make everybody play ball on the main show that you got going on Wednesday night. You had no competition. Now you segue shows into Saturday night or Friday night. Nobody watches that stuff. They barely watch a main show. You're killing your own product from within. Just because you don't want to appease three guys that never stepped foot into WWF, E, F, G, H, I, N. The Bucks have been free agents before. They don't want nothing to do with them because they know they're a pain in the ass. And with Cody there, now they're definitely not getting in. Omega, he's all banged up. Then he's never been there either. He was in the developmental way back in the day, and he couldn't cut it then. So if you haven't, if you kicked out the biggest star you ever had, the guy that popped, the most sales you've ever had, your highest rated show was that first CM Punk show back. You're doing everything like cookie cutter to what WCW did, and you don't, everybody gets it but the guy that's running the company, and you're on the same network. That's the worst part. Brad, thoughts on the show?
Man, I wish I could sit down with Tony Khan and watch Who Killed WCW with him. Be like, take notes. What the fuck are you doing? And this last episode, I mean, everything Ed said is spot on, man. Nobody's taking ownership. The more I hear Kevin Nash talk, the more I hear Bret Hart talk, the more I don't like those guys. And I used to be a huge Bret the Hitman Hart, fan. But they're so cynical now. But anyway, yeah, man, like this last episode, especially, and the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, God dang it, AEW, please watch this one episode, especially. They had the blood thing with Kevin Nash, which AEW just tried to repeat, and it didn't go over either time. And then the thing that I caught out of this episode that was the most damning for what killed WCW is they had all these old superstars from WWE, Hogan, Nash. Sting was the original, right? Flair was the original, but these guys were back and forth between brands. But those old guys, they're on a time limit. They have a shelf life, right? They're mid-card talent. That's where you develop those dudes to be the future stars of the brand. And the WWE has NXT. AEW doesn't have that. They have a lot of these old heads from WWE. They gave creative talent to another mistake that WCW did. And we're seeing the repeats all down the road here. But what happened to WCW? They had their mid-card talent, the Benoit, Eddie, Saturn, that whole faction jumped ship in the middle of like this peak. WCW was kind of on the ledge. They had all that mid-card talent jump to WWE. They were mid-carders in WCW, but became superstars in WWE because they had that potential. What's that?
Rey Mysterio.
There's a whole list of them. And we're seeing, and now it hasn't developed as much. Stone Cold Steve. What's that?
Stone Cold.
But it hasn't developed that much currently in WWE, but we're seeing a lot of mid-card talent from AEW. Andrade came back. Ethan Page. We're seeing all these dudes coming over and they're starting to get a push in WWE. Not to mention they lost Cody Rhodes and CM Punk within like a year or two of each other. So God dang, man. And I want AEW to succeed so badly because it's a monopoly on any brand is not good. And I don't want WWE to have a monopoly over wrestling. I don't want it. TNA needs to succeed. Hopefully they can inject some money and some interest into that by pulling their stars into WWE. And maybe that's why they're doing that. A la, those ECW days when they were doing the same thing. But hopefully they can maybe a big star will jump from WWE to AEW. Like we haven't seen that in a while. Who was the last one? Edge? He's way past his prime, you know?
You're not gonna throw Sasha Banks something and say
No.
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 I also thought the biggest insight of the episode was about Goldberg and how stiff he was and the
Yeah.
big push that he got and everything like that. And all of a sudden it just and he has that feud going with Bret Hart. And I think Bret, I think he's got, I mean, he really was a great talent. And they basically, what was it, $2.8 million they gave him to put him on a TV show. And you're telling me that he couldn't work with Hogan, even if he doesn't like him. You're telling me he couldn't work with any of those first tier guys that were in there. You're telling me that the old boys club of Flair and Sting, that whole group in there, that he couldn't work with them. Come on now. That's just ridiculous. And
What?
you can see that, even Kevin Sullivan has you can tell that he has a hard time kind of like saying like what was really going on. It was just, I don't know. That it was a great, it's a great episode. And it's kind of nice to hear something a little bit different, but it's the same thing. I mean, it's just you can see that there's a reason why the upper level executives had no idea what was going on. They had no idea about wrestling, and
None.
they wanted, they just wanted to go after, hey, we want TBS or TNT to beat USA. That's all we cared about. So anyway,
Is it only three episodes?
four. There's
There's gonna
four.
be, yes.
I think that what the show is lacking, if I could critique the show itself, is there's so many guys that are not on the show that I think would have made the show even better, even if they had just had small parts of an interview with them. Tony Schiavone should have been on it. The reason why I say that is Tony was there all the way from Starrcade '83 all the way till the very end. So I'm sure his point, whether you like it or you don't, it was valid. He could have told some really good stories. People probably wouldn't have liked that. I thought it was a shame that Flair wasn't on it. Whether you like him or you don't, he should have been on it. Sting should have been on it. They missed out with Sting, Flair, Tony Schiavone, and probably if they could have got him, Hogan would have been great on there to fire up some BS and tell some stories. So those four, I think, would have really. And with The Rock being involved, I'm sure if The Rock had reached out, he probably could have got, most of them. So my opinion doesn't matter, but it does on this podcast. So I think that they dropped the ball a little bit with the talking heads. And it's unfortunate because Scott Hall passed away. So I think he would have added to it if they got him. Sean Waltman's not on it either. He could have probably told some really good stories too. So yeah, so I think Jericho used to narrate those episodes. They could add Jericho on it. So they missed about maybe a dozen guys that they could have reached out to that, with The Rock being involved, if he had called, I'm sure he could have got some really good points from, the guys that were in there and see how the stories jive or see how who's lying even more. Hogan's probably one of them. But so is that it for the wrestling talk this week? And we can start winding down. Bradford, you got something?
No, that's it, man. I just want to highlight Drew McIntyre quit, showed up on SmackDown, literally beat CM Punk to a bloody pulp on regular TV, bloody face, had to wheel him out on a stretcher. So, like, we're back, baby. We're back.
So hopefully we didn't mention we're missing a couple of the guys on the Goon Squad this week. It's been a long week. Let's just say that we're gonna do a reset with a couple of things. It's episode 71. We're gonna do a new segment. Hopefully I can drop it in somewhere around here. Chris has a cooking thing with recipes that he wants to do. He said it's going to be very comedic. So hopefully you can get that to me by the time I put this into production. So it's looking like this might drop Monday when I get back home and kind of get settled and hopefully have it up. I want to be home in time to watch game seven. So let's do some shout outs and we'll put this one to bed so somebody can finally relax because I've been up since 5:30 this morning.
Ah, dang.
Ed, what do you got for a shout out?
I'd like to know who Pookie is. That's my shout out. I want to know who Pookie is. Okay? We all know what I'm talking about.
Bradford, what do you got for a shout out this week?
I have no idea what Ed is talking about. Should I?
Ed, you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, Hop Tooie girl.
Oh, that girl. What'd
Yeah,
you call her?
I
Pookie?
want to know who Pookie is.
Oh, yeah, we all want to know. My shout out is to you, Andy, burning both ends of the candle, taking the kids down, dad of the year, well, second best dad of the year. All right. I still hold that title, but I'll give you second best dad. But also first best podcast entrepreneur, mediator, producer, director, whatever you boss, whatever you want to call it. Because I get you, man. Them long drives, the kids sports, man, that's a lot of work. You don't let your kids down. We're like your second family, your second kids. You don't let us down.
The Iron Man of the League.
Iron Man, yeah, go get some sleep, buddy.
Well, let me say the shout out goes to everybody. I mean, it was a long car ride, long days. Friday was long. Today was long. Thursday was long. Got another long day ahead of me tomorrow. Probably won't get to relax until Monday, but I do it to serve multiple purposes, and we've touched on that, good, bad, and different. It's all culminates in one big positive vibe. It's a plethora. It serves a lot of purpose, peace of mind, bullshitting with your buddies about like-minded stuff, yucking it up, breaking some tension, having some laughs, doing some stuff, and talking about just the stuff that, like I said, if we're all sitting around just hanging out, watching a game, or just hanging around busting balls, dude, if there was not the world we live in, this podcast would be 1,000 times funnier than what it actually is. So we color within those lines. I want to use, it's like I say this all the time, I want to use the 64 box of Crayola crayons with the sharpener on the back. They only give me the eight. So with that being said, I want to just thank everybody. And we don't have the professor, we don't have the phantom, we don't have Chris, but we're going to get everybody back in episode 75. We're hoping to get everybody back in one big love fest and yuck it up some more. So from the great state of South Carolina, in the beautiful city of Charleston, that's episode 71, fellas. So
Later.
later.
Check you out. Drive safe.
Yep.